is valued at around £23 billion. BBC News. This is BBC Radio 4, and now the classic serial. And today it's the final part of Desolation Island by Patrick O'Brien, starring David Robb as Captain Jack Aubrey, with Richard Delane as the naval surgeon and spy Stephen Maturin. In September 1811, Jack's old and ailing ship, the Leopard, docks in Recife in Brazil on its way to Australia with a cargo of convicts. Before the voyage, Stephen has been briefed that one of the convicts is an American spy.
Desolation Island by Patrick O'Brien. Dramatised for radio by Roger Daines. Episode 2.
There will be war, Maturin. There already is. And monstrous inhuman tyranny in Europe. An American venture into arms is of little comparative consequence.
The lady is between 25 and 30, but she retains her bloom. Black hair, blue eyes, about 5'8", but looks taller since she stands so straight. A slight but undeniable figure, though these things can be improved by stuffing. She has a thoroughly genteel air, nothing bold or flaunting. Writes like a cat with every third word underlined, cannot spell. Speaks excellent French. No other education that can be detected.
Do we suspect a French intrigue?
We think not. The lady's means of support are unknown. London's money men consider her an unsound risk.
You might almost be describing Diana Villiers.
There is a striking resemblance, but no connection beside the unfortunate correspondence.
Which we have suppressed.
Which we have suppressed, as you say. At one time there was a somewhat nebulous Mr. Wogan, but he appears to have retired to Baltimore. She probably combines her intelligence gathering with the higher prostitution. There have been a number of liaisons here, not merely Americans. Men of interest, even great interest. This is why she's not to be hanged.
So am I to sound, Mrs. Wogan?
All grist to your mill, my dear Maturin. The intelligence service of the United States is but an infant plant, yet some chief mind there is at work here in London, and a mind of considerable subtlety. I should be infinitely obliged to you were you to come to a name.
I will have words with Bondon.
Do not, I beg. I do hate to see an honest man flogged. Bondon is not alone in acquainting me with the condition of our poor Leopard's knees and braces. I understand the stern post is similarly punk.
A man cannot be punished for telling truth. The Leopard is indeed somewhat...
horrible and old. Oh, come, Jack. It is natural for any captain to think his command the finest ship that ever was.
It is less the ship than her crew, Stephen, gives me pause. I can get no hands till the Cape. More than 3,000 miles of sailing with 60 men to a watch.
You've got none here?
12 Portuguese only, formerly slaves. I can press no one at Recife.
Volunteers? Reputation must go before you.
So does word of the old Leopard. You have put 25 convalescents ashore, among them my prized first lieutenant. I've had to promote Grant.
You may have another score of hands tolerably brisk within a month.
Your jail fever has knocked us on our beam ends, Stephen. And now I'm told there is a Dutch 74 in these waters.
A butter box, would it be?
You may call them that. But they have thumped us most cruelly in the past. I was a midshipman at Camperdown. Their Freiheit killed half my gun deck shipmates and battered us to something very near a wreck.
Well, now you're in command.
Yeah, 52 to 74 against me in guns. Far, far more in men. Vaxum Height is her name. I have not the slightest wish to meet her.
Six minutes and 32 seconds, sir.
Too slow, Mr. Grant, and not accurate enough. Once more, if you please.
Mr. Wilby, we will fire again by divisions.
October the 21st. Steady breezes, east of south. Close hauled. At three, exercised the great guns.
How many does that make, Mr. Harrapath?
Howland's is the seventh, sir.
At this rate, we shall exhaust our venereals long before the Cape.
They all seem to be recent infections, yet there was no shore leave at Recife.
You are to observe, Mr. Harrapath, that a protracted voyage may bring about a wonderful increase in sodomitical practices. To the ship's surgeon, pox in all its forms is familiar as the common cold to a land doctor. Our patients, however, present the very authentic marks of Venus herself.
There are only three women aboard, sir.
One of them is a fire ship.
It cannot be Mrs. Boswell.
Her advanced state of gravidity would suggest not. Mrs. Wogan is out of the question.
Yes.
Sure, the only source is the infanticide Peggy Barnes.
Damn them all. They might as well be a troop of basilisks. Yes. You must know about basilisks, Stephen. They spread pests by glaring at people.
This is not contracted by glaring. The contrary, rather.
How do they get at her?
Ask rather how can she be rendered chaste? A sericunium is not to be come by in ships of the fourth rate. A belt for the purpose.
Oh!
Perhaps the armourer might fashion one. He's an ingenious man.
Well, this hellfire Peggy of yours will reduce my whole remaining company to a parcel of noseless, toothless, bald paralytics. We shall have to head her up in a barrel with no bunghole.
That would answer, sure.
Let us pass to your vile witch, Mrs. Boswell.
Soon to be brought to bed of a baby.
And tend to one another damned female. She's told one of the new Portuguese hands that the ship is unlucky.
Oh, she's been reading fortunes again.
All the people have heard her tale. And so, of course, the two-headed fetch of a murdered sheriff's man has now been seen by the forenoon watch.
I doubt they've crossed her hand with false silver. For that, a man must expect a dark fortune.
The thing squats in the bowsprit netting, it appears. Every hand on the forecastle racing off, tumbling over one another like a herd of calves. All of Grant's shouting could not get the headsails trimmed.
Very well, very well. I shall endeavour to lay both pox and ghost.
I am serious, Stephen. And then there is your Mrs. Wogan.
Do not stand so close to me, Mr. Harrapath. Well, have you not heard the rumours?
I have heard many, in the midshipman's mess and elsewhere. As before in London, I credit them as little here as there.
Mr. Byron!
Dr. Maturin must be aware of them, to have his assistant walk with me instead of attending me himself.
I ask no more than this, Louisa.
Don't! They listen.
Give her a point in the heart!
Michael, there is nothing between me and Dr. Maturin.
He has been good to me, you know.
I'm so happy to have a friend aboard. It would be a dismal voyage all alone.
You will never be alone.
How much more dismal to arrive at Botany Bay with no one. And did you stow away to follow me?
You know I did.
Lieutenant Grant is staring.
You were so very glad to see me at first.
I am still.
It was like our very first days together, long ago. I am afraid I am a dull companion.
Does Maturin still keep the key to my cabin?
He gives it to me.
Does he trust you with it?
He trusts me with you.
You are using him.
Else I would not see you.
Often need I warn you of stepping too close?
Are you seeking once more to cause me pain?
Are you using your position to force yourself upon me?
Louisa, that you should accuse me of that.
I give you pain.
It is a want of common kindness and affection in you. You have long been so.
Is it the money you regret?
I gave it gladly, and gladly you took it.
I think I've taken enough of this air, Mr. Harrapath. Should you wish to make acknowledgement of your fault, you will find me in my cabin. You have the key.
Ah, Bonden. Pray remind me, where might I find the bowsprit netting?
Which is where we stow the foretopmast staysail of the jib, Doctor.
I shall desire you to bring me there after quarters.
But, sir, it'll be dark by then, quite dark.
We'll procure a little lantern.
Well, I doubt it would ever do, sir. Tis right out plumb over the sea, beyond the head. You would surely slip.
Stuff, Bonden, I'm an old sea hand, a quadrumane.
There's nothing there to clap on to. Tis the most dangerous place in the barky, sir.
We shall meet here, by this...
The night head, sir?
Exactly so. Do not forget the lantern, if you please.
Is this not the noble place of the world?
The men say that the ghost's abode is in the horses there. No, where the netting hangs.
I'm enraptured with the bow wave. I could gaze upon this forever. But to work. Are they watching?
All hands, Doctor, by the looks of them.
Then pray set up the Bengal light. There, and pass me the little small bottle of holy water.
There, sir.
In nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Oh, Jack, I've wanted this for so long, so long. There. And again. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honour. Mr. Grant's duty, and there's a ship, fine upon a larboard bow.
Thank you, Killick. Coffee and hot.
Here already, sir.
I shall be on deck directly.
A ship, sir! Though of what force or nature I cannot tell.
To Gant Harriots! Windward braces!
To Gant Harriots! Windward braces!
For God's sake, Mr. Grant!
Sir?
A strange ship at dawn, and you made no move to take in your Tagants.
I thought it proper to send to wake my captain, sir.
We must see and not be seen, Mr. Grant. All hands! All hands to wear ship!
All hands!
A cursed old woman. A matter of minutes, and he sends to wake me.
He's never known action, my dear. He envies it in you.
Tom Pullings would have known, whom you had me leave ashore in Recife.
Buzz, he would have died else. And Grant cannot know his duty in this. Little do I like the man, but you're in danger of being unjust. I saw a pintado just before I came down.
Give you joy.
You fear you have seen the Vaxmheit?
She was shaking a reef out of her topsails. Indiamen and Dutchmen have a way of reefing them at sunset. But this year's Indiaman should have reached the Cape 2 months ago.
Might you not then close with your putative Dutchman to have a better look?
You forget he has the weather gauge of us. He would have a good chance to bring on an action just as he chose.
You do not choose to fight him, sir.
Good heavens, no. A 74? No, ignominious flight is the order of the day. Fight him? What a fellow you are, Stephen.
The whole ship seems to have turned tinker. Pray, Doctor, why are they so eager that their balls be round?
So they may fly straight and true, man. The better to strike the enemy in his vital parts.
On deck there!
Is that the captain high up there?
Here's the log, Mr. Byron! And send me out my flask!
It is. He's been watching a strange, perhaps a wicked sail for a great while, huh?
He sounds like the voice of God. I must not be disrespectful. Is there going to be a battle?
This is what we call reconnaissance, man. There'll be no battle at all.
Mr. Grant! Cannons in cover! Point it out!
Oh, is that the ship? We were looking in the wrong direction.
Cannons in colours there! Mr. Larkin, give her a point and a half!
Looks very small. Great way off.
Great guns laugh at such distances.
I begin to understand, then, why they make such a coil at their hammering.
7 knots and 3 fathoms, sir!
The other ship states he, too, is a British man of war in commission by his flag.
Then we are happy.
Private signal and make our number!
Oh, false colours and false signals are all fair in war, ma'am. Captain Aubrey is of a particularly fertile mind in deceiving an enemy thereby.
All away!
If he proves false, shall we fight him?
Never in life, ma'am. We shall run into the setting sun, and by dawn we shall be 100 miles apart. See? He makes his reply to our private signal.
Is it right, sir?
Hard over!
It is not, ma'am.
Baron! Signal enemy of superior force in sight! General chase to south-southwest! 2 guns to leeward, and keep it flying!
Aye, aye, sir!
Clap onto the rail, as we say. The ship is going about.
I did not realize we could maneuver so quickly.
He's hoisting his true colors. Hold till we see.
Smoke! He's on fire!
Get down, Nap! On the deck!
Now we shall have some fun. Mr. Willoughby?
Hands back, Bill.
Whenever you please.
The range is pretty much extreme, sir.
You think I stripped the cabin bare to fill it with nines and not have a crack at old Butterbox there before nightfall?
First to change your honour which you ordered.
Put it there, Killick. Should you care to pull a lanyard with us?
Should I, sir? I should indeed.
Fire after Mr. Willoughby, then.
Wait for the pitch. Wait.
Now, Killick. Now!
Harder, deep. No. Oh, yes, like that. Deep, harder. Yes. Bang, bang. Again. Smash. Yes.
Sir. Dr. Maturin, sir.
What now?
Come quick, sir. The master's murdered our lieutenant.
What? Mother of God.
What's happened here?
Ah, that flute playing bugger!
Give us something to lash him down with! What's happened to Mr. Howard?
He's dead, Doctor. Done for by this mad bastard.
Here, ligatures. Time with these.
Hold your round, Mr. Larkin!
Subdue him and carry him to his cot. Give him this. Force it upon him if you need to. It is laudanum, it will calm him.
Well now, Mr. Larkin. Let us carry you away. Handsomely now. There. Steady now, Mr. Larkin. Ready.
The aorta is severed clean at the crest of the arch.
Mr. Howard was just to play a tune, sir.
He does look astonished.
If you please, sir, close his eyes.
Death came upon him in an instant.
He picked up his flute, just was beginning to put it together when Mr. Larkin got up.
Is this the weapon?
That's for you, you flute-playing bugger, he said. Lunged with it straight across the table. And then they fell. Him in a roaring drunken fit. And him.
South, 1517 east. The Cape 480 miles nor-nor-east. At 2, committed the body of John Condom Howard, Lieutenant of Marines, to the deep.
Sail ho! On deck there! Sail ho!
Well away!
Off to larboard, sir! Topsails on the right!
Out reefs! Fort against sail!
Reefs! Fort against sail, sir! Out reefs!
What a persistent Dutchman it is, to be sure.
If it is him, he is certainly devilish sly. Unless he can read my thoughts and has private notice of the wind into the bargain. Or we have a witch aboard, communicating our secrets to him by a familiar spirit.
Ah, you're not so superstitious.
Many of the hands are.
Did they say it is Mrs. Boswell again?
I beg your pardon, sir.
Mr. Grant.
They sent to tell the doctor that Larkin is at it once more.
We can hear, Mr. Grant. I attend him in good time.
I will have them told.
We should get rid of that poor raving maniac. Larkin, Doctor. Oh. They're saying he's a Jonah.
Oh. Witches, Jonahs, ghosts. A little life soon to enter into this world of misery.
And a Dutchman I cannot shake off. Who knows where we are bound. I must keep astern of me, or he will claw us to ribbon and matchwood. We must run ever south, ever away from the Cape and safe harbour. And a stern chase is always long.
Is that the meaning of the term? I supposed it to mean an eager, a grim, a most determined pursuit inspired by inveterate animosity.
That too.
Well, so this is a stern chase.
I have administered 5 and 20 drops.
That should certainly calm her.
The effects of laudanum upon the child would make an interesting study.
Should it live?
Should the mother live, said Herapath, but without her?
Will it be long, do you think?
Little experience do I have of midwifery. But a breach presentation is a long, long labor. Looks to me that we have an active time ahead.
Mr. Grant, we will take in the spritsail, then get the yard fore and aft and set an inner jib.
But surely, sir, in the fort
is... This is not real weather yet, Mr. Grant. We will bear up another point.
Sir.
No more questions, if you please. The ship must be put before the wind or she will lose her course.
The Wexham Hyde is still gaining, sir.
She will. Heavy weather favors the heavier ship. This is the action you have long been wishing for, Mr. Grant. I trust you will like it.
The baby's heartbeat is strange. Will you listen?
Pray God we do not have to cut for it.
You would consider abdominal surgery in such a case.
We are in extremis. You're right. The child within is like to be lost. Oh, at least we shall not have to bemoan our lack of proper forceps. Please to prepare the instruments.
Shall I send for some hands to hold her?
Do not, Mr. Herapath. There is this no common man should see. We'll try some more laudanum and bind it to the table, rather. Now, I shall have to cut, I think, here.
It's Grant's duty, sir. The Vaxheim Hyde has opened fire.
So I gather, Mr. Byron. But two can play at that game, you know. Can you make her out, Mr. Wilby?
I can hit her while we're up, sir, when she's running down the far slope astern.
A hole in her fore topsail might make it split. Even the odds for speed.
If you please, Your Honor, sir.
Well, I'll fire one off.
When you choose, Mr. Wilby.
Your Honor, might I take the lanyard?
Stand back, Killen.
Now! Can you see?
No hole. No follow shot, either.
Which I could have had both.
Steel and speed, Mr. Herapath. Surgeon's only true need.
Oh, God.
Pluck it up, man. Take the baby up at once. She'll bleed to death before ever the uterus is closed.
Oh, this is warm. And so red.
She, Mr. Herapath. And she will begin to blue as I cut the umbilicus. So. The centre. Clear her breathing while I close this wound. Use your little finger. I forgot to add a steady hand to my surgeon's needs.
Thirteen knots and a fathom, sir!
Thank you, Mr. Byron! Let the pumps be rigged! And pass the word for the carpenter!
Pumps and chips it is, sir!
Mr. Byron!
Sir?
Have you been in an engagement?
I have. Fleet actions for the most part.
In such a sea as this?
This is not the weather for such, sir.
What is the captain thinking of?
I expect he thinks to save his ship, sir. And us with her. A bloody-minded Dutchman would be like to take us if he could, but has no chance to overwhelm us by boarding. Not in these seas. So he must intend our destruction.
Then he only needs a lucky shot.
Him or us, sir. First to lose a mast or a vital sail. And it's the death of every soul aboard that unlucky ship.
Lord,
that last was true. A little low. Did you see his fall of shot?
Which I caught the splash, Your Honor. 20 yards short of our starboard quarter.
He looks right, sir. He wants to knock our rudder, range alongside us, and give us his broadside.
The bloody-minded dog.
She's coming on too close.
Mr. Grant's duty, sir. Our mizzen top is hit, fair and square.
We must lighten the ship, Mr. Byron. Start the water and try the jib, 1/3 in.
Start the water, jib 1/3 in it is, sir.
Ready again, sir? Let me fire it, sir. Just the one chance. I beg, sir.
Very well, Killick. Take the lanyard.
get one home on him.
Don't I wish he may like it.
Watch, Killick, watch. The second her ball spit comes up.
Jesus!
-43°49 south, 19°32 east. Wind slacking. Storm blowing itself out. Fore topsail alone. James Grant, Lieutenant. Commanding the Leopard.
Well, my dear, you do not like the light. Just so.
Thank you, Stephen.
How much do you collect?
Sea is high.
You've taken Lord Nelson's wound, you know.
Nelson?
Your forehead hung over your eye. Dare say you would almost have given an arm to follow him, but that was not asked of you.
Nelson.
The wound is spectacular, though. It'll spoil your beauty. But you've had worse.
Was it the gun?
A Dutch ball came aboard. You were struck first by a splinter, 2 feet of oak with a wicked, jagged, cutting edge.
First?
There is some degree of concussion that I do not quite like.
Struck first?
Hardly had I stitched back the flap of your skin, cleared your eye, than you went blundering off into the recoil of another gun. You were nearly a mere pulp, my dear, of little interest even to anatomy. But as it is, I have great hopes of your leg.
Leg?
Is there any feeling in it now?
What leg?
Never be perturbed.
It is numb. Is it even there still?
Oh, I've seen far uglier limbs preserved.
Stephen.
I wish Mr. Grant asks, may he report, Your Honor?
Oh, no.
I will speak with him.
Dr. Maturin. How does the captain?
My patient must not be disturbed.
But my report?
Disturbance might agitate my patient's mind.
Do you mean Captain Aubrey is not right in the head?
I do not. It is no part of my function, sir, to discuss my patient's maladies.
I saw his wound.
He's weak from loss of blood.
His wits did seem astray.
I dislike your eager tone extremely, Mr. Grant.
Command must devolve
Red
upon...
Blood, sir, do you speak to me of command? Are you so willing to believe the worst?
I am First Lieutenant of this ship.
You're impertinent, sir.
Then I will return, sir, to my duty.
Right, mine. Now, 25 drops of this will rectify your humor so far as physic can.
Did you see her, Stephen?
See whom?
I see her. Over and over again. Through a bloody curtain, I see her.
You speak of the Vaxamheit.
The lurch of a foremast. Stays part. Mast and sail carry right away over her bows.
Drink.
I see her brooch, too. Broadside on that vast breaking wave. My God.
My God!
600 men, flying spars, rigging, streamed wild, and then nothing. Nothing at all.
Fine. Bright morning for the time of year, sir.
I find it disagreeably chill, Barrett Bond. The snow has flattened the sea amazingly. What are you at?
New pudding in for the mizzen, sir.
Oh.
Yeah. How does the owner?
Passed a comfortable night and is as well as can be expected.
Well, I should like to give him joy of his victory, sir. Well, so should we all.
You may not believe me, Bondon, but he can take no joy in it at all.
Well, the captain of a 50-gun ship who rejoices not in sinking a 74? He's all to seek in that effect.
Snow.
Half a foot on deck, sir.
Do you not like the cold, Mr. Grant?
There was no snow when last I was in these waters, sir.
Is that why you now drive north?
A prudent commander will not go south of 39 degrees.
Speak plainer, Mr. Grant.
The forties are nothing but strong winds, storms, and pestilence. I speak with 35 years' experience, sir.
Don't see your 35 years' experience lead you to alter course without orders, sir.
We are 43 degrees 40 south, sir.
Anyone would think I've been killed in the action, Mr. Grant. There is the line. It pointed first northeast and now north.
A prudent commander...
What the devil do you mean, sir?
I beg pardon.
East, southeast, Mr. Grant. And let the bell be muffled if Ellie goes through my head.
There we are, little thing.
You're handy with this little creature.
I've always loved babies. I do long for one of my own. How does her mother?
Well enough to feed her. One cannot but admire a constitution that survives a caesarean delivery in the midst of battle. I must ask you to walk early with Mr. Herapath. You've looked yellowish and peaked these last few days.
Oh, upon my word, Dr. Maturin, you know how to compliment a lady.
The air is extremely raw. I recommend a pelisse, two pairs of stockings, two pairs of drawers pulled well up about belly.
You're beyond the pale of humanity. You tell me I'm not good in looks and proceed directly to name what cannot be named.
I'm a physician, ma'am. Gallantry would be out of place. Worse, it would be unscientific.
I suppose I value your disinterest. You were once so indiscreet as to ask whether I might be confined.
Cribbed and cabined, you replied, but not.
Well, were you to ask me now, I should be obliged to say, perhaps.
Do you wish the usual investigation?
I am fairly convinced of the matter.
Then you are to take more than common care of yourself. No high living, no gross indulgence of any kind.
I have half a pot of jam, 3 pounds of biscuits and a jar of tea. High living indeed.
-43°40 south, 42°45 east. The people variously employed. Collecting parties out in the ship's boats to harvest ice for drinking water.
Deeply gratifying spectacle.
It is like a floating castle made of glass.
Now, is that a sea leopard, I wonder? God damn this glass!
I doubt you will clear the lens. The fog is increasing.
That's all stuff, Barrett
Bondon. It is not.
Crop a hole, mates.
I'm telling you, Joe, I was in the Erebus north of the banks. Got an ice island. The current always sets in toward it.
Oh, my God. Everyone knows the current sets in toward down here.
Yeah.
Grab that onto the block, can't you? Do you want a hammock sent down or what?
It'll turn its head till we see.
What fantastic shapes the ice makes. Cliffs, bays, caverns.
The larger the island, stronger the current, and that, matey, is a bloody large island.
Yeah, cannot make it up. I shall go sit with Mrs. Wogan and her stove for a while.
Hey! Up for the helm! All hands!
All hands! We've struck on the ice!
I ruined two times! Not for your cleverness, Joe Place! You know nothing!
Hold your jaw and haul, you silly bugger!
Down with the helm!
No helm, sir!
Give me the key. I must get her out from down there.
Arm yourself, Mr. Herapath.
Give me the key, damn you.
Get me off, sir!
There are no rending timbers that I can hear, no evident leak, no immediate peril.
You don't know that. Give me Louisa.
Set all hands to the pump!
He and that of the forepeak.
Out of my way! Make a road there!
How well we're throwing out the water! Too bloody well, mate. The scuppers can't take it all.
Yes, it is swilling about the deck, sure.
She only has to get up and it'll pour down the hatches every time she rises.
Perhaps we may exhaust it all soon.
You don't know nothing, you bloody fool. Save your row and pump, why can't you?
Thank you, Doctor. Better get back to pumping. God, days of it. Pumping, watch after watch.
Keep the wound as dry as you can. Where's the water?
Above the oar up, nearly. The hold is full and full, and everybody knows it.
What of the fathering?
Never held. Bloody pumps keep breaking. Choking with small coal and the like.
How much longer will they hold out?
Well, ships repairs them. Repairs them again and again.
I mean the men.
The hands as don't know the captain. I doubt they'll last out another day, sir. I said we was too close to that bleeding ice mountain.
They are exhausted.
And frightened, sir. They hide now rather than pump, pump forever in a barkie they say will sink at any minute. They say Mr. Grant knows these waters and will get them safe back to the Cape. They say the captain's not right in the head, which I crowned one of the buggers for. And in course they all know this is an unlucky ship.
May I leave, sir? The water is now over the top of the well and gaining.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
So, there we are, sir. We have done all we can by the ship. Shall I provision the boats?
I believe she may swim yet.
She is sinking under us, sir. I presume you will go in the launch.
I do not intend leaving my ship, Mr. Grant. We will follow the leak again, fashion a rudder with a spare topmast.
Sir, the hands have wrought hard ever since the moment we struck. Very hard.
They have done their duty. No man could ask more.
We cannot, in honesty, give them any more hope. And with the water as it is, sir, I doubt they may long continue to obey orders.
Would you, Mr. Grant?
Sir, no man shall ever accuse me of mutiny. There is no enemy at hand, no battle. Can you order men to their death?
The hands certainly know your mind, Mr. Grant.
I believe the boats can reach the Cape. I believe the ship must founder.
They will soon be away, Stephen. Before nightfall, probably. Here, dress up warm and dry. They will take you.
You do not go?
No, but I put on you not the least obligation.
You stay as a matter of principle. Put that aside, then, and lay it plain before me now. I speak for some very important papers that I have, not for myself.
Do these documents pertain to Mrs. Wogan?
You wish to know?
No. Enough that you say they are important. The launch may get through. Grant is an excellent seaman.
He put us onto the ice.
Now, I say an excellent seaman. But I still think the ship has the better chance.
Then I shall make copies to give to Grant.
Mr. Grant's duty, sir. Some of the hands have forced the spirit room door. The larboard chain pump has broken down.
Call out the Marines, Mr. Byron, if they will serve. Make sure the women are well guarded. My compliments to Mr. Grant, and I will see him when he is ready.
Aye, aye, sir.
Copy your papers, Stephen. Take care of your stores. It will soon become ugly, squalid, sad. I am afraid that this is the end.
Hit me up, will you?
Thursday, December the 25th. Course estimated east 10 degrees south. Latitude observed 46 degrees 37 south. Longitude estimated 50-15 east. Winds light and variable with haze and rain. Calm sea with small ice. Pumps gained 5 foot in the day. Christmas dinner, fresh pork and double plum duff.
Do you feel in the mood for music, Stephen?
Do you?
I've had Killick bring in yours. I thought we might scrape, if only for a glass.
Well, I will.
I'm going to tell the officers presently, but I thought you might like to hear it first. Mozart?
What you will.
There is a land laid down in about 4944 south, 69 east. Desolation Island, it is called.
A fair name for our situation, so it is.
And there's always the chance of an error, since I cannot be sure of our longitude, but I prefer the risk to that of hauling north.
Why can you not ascertain our longitude?
The chronometers were overturned in the during the night of Grant's departure.
But in some, we'd adventure still further south.
Well, I am confident we can find the place, though you might choose to say a prayer or two. My old nurse always said there was nothing like Latin for prayers.
Shall we?
Your hand has grown horny. Oh,
perpetual pumping.
Do you gain at all?
Perhaps a little. But the water keeps on.
I have not seen you an age, Michael.
There are so few hands.
There. The snouts.
I go from sick bay to pumps, to sleep to pumps. We all do.
Sleep soon.
Well, I should be now.
But you came here.
A baby is a necessary object to visit for an assistant surgeon.
She is lovely.
You are lovely. I cannot be found here.
Michael, ours will be lovely.
January the 3rd, 1812. 57 degrees 41 south observed, 69 degrees east estimated. At 7, anchored in the northwest bay of Desolation Island. Carried out a hawser from the gunroom port and made all fast. At 10, the people to sleep.
This is paradise, sure.
A little damp for that, Stephen.
I've already discovered 53 kinds of moss.
No doubt there are many more. Good morning, Mr. Byron.
Good morning, sir. Doctor?
Mr. Byron, how do your bowels?
A little watery, sir, but they do tolerably well.
Men should be purged of their gross humours daily, Mr. Byron, particularly them that will breakfast on albatross eggs weighing nigh on a purser's pound apiece.
Yeah, we'll keep laying them, Doctor.
When I think how I did prize my first, then perhaps the only specimen in the Three Kingdoms, and now you deliberately break two every morning.
Sir, Mr. Gray's duty, and he has finished covering the leak.
Now that is good news. My compliments to Chips, Mr. Byron, and a double tot to his crew. Let us move to the stern post.
Very sad Jim Crack affair from the start, sir.
I disliked it extremely from the beginning.
Sure, I don't deny I absolutely shed tears when we cut into it. All behind the sheathing, sir. Deeply rotten.
Horribly defective indeed. Stop here, Bondon.
Row off, all.
The ice has got deep into the wood and spit it to buggery. Saving your honour, sir.
So, for the rudder?
There'll have to be new gudgeons and much longer arms so they may reach into the solid timbers within her body.
And we threw the ship's forge overboard.
The anvil, sledgehammers, and all the armourer's tools with them, sir. So then it was lighten her or sink with her.
Yeah.
I dare say we shall have to winter in this bloody hole. The rum already almost gone and the baccy running out.
I may not come to that yet, John.
No? Well, don't commit the optimist with me, Barrett Bondon. Yeah. It don't suit you. Can you ship a rudder without pintles or set pintles without gudgeons or forge bloody gudgeons with no gear?
I'm just of the opinion there may be something turn up.
Like what?
Like that sail.
Eh?
The hut's there! Sail ho!
Sail ho! Round it to the point of the bay! Sail ho!
To tell the truth, sir, I do not care to ask a favour of King George's navy.
Our countries are not at war, Captain Putnam. Or they were not, at least, when we quitted Portsmouth, and you have been away longer than we.
You're right, sir. I am worse found to know than you.
So you will let my surgeon look at your invalids?
We will not set foot aboard the Leopard.
We recognized her the moment we came in.
She killed Reuben here's cousin in the year 7.
Fired 3 broadsides into our Chesapeake unprepared. I had rather see the Leopard at the bottom of the ocean, sir, than sailing on its surface.
You don't say that for you, Captain Aubrey. We know she was under a different man. But I reckon his is the view of most Americans, and I dare say you would not blame them.
I'm heartily sorry for a gentleman. May I send my surgeon to the Lafayette, then? When would be convenient?
No, sir.
He has an American assistant, if that will make the favor a little more palatable to you.
We might allow the surgeon's mate.
Who is like to find himself in a tolerable awkward situation when the war does break out? You think it likely, Mr. Hyde? If the English do go on as they do, how is it to be prevented? They stop our ships, take whatever men they choose to consider British. If I was President Jefferson, I'd have declared war right away. The moment your Leopard opened fire on my cousin, sir. Let us hope, then, that peaceable relations may continue.
I doubt that, sir. We are a proud nation. We will not be put upon. And we have whipped you before, and let me tell you, sir, we have frigates building, yes, and build 2, that can whip anything you have in the same class.
We will declare, sir, and we shall aim to wipe off a long, long score.
You have done amazingly, Mr. Hyde, with so empty a medicine chest. Who is next?
Captain Putnam. He is confined to his bed.
The pain from his jaw?
He took a pair of pincers to the tooth, Mr. Herapath. Said he couldn't bear the pain of it. Made it worse, I reckon. Mm-hmm. Can you draw it for him?
I have not the right instruments with me. And some of your other cases are graver than I have come across before. I would strongly urge you to allow my chief to come over with me.
No, sir. No Englishman ever on board our ship.
He's an Irishman and a friend to liberty.
He is an officer of King George's Navy. Friend, I will speak plain with you. A good third of our crew are Irish-born. Some are fled from that very navy your Dr. Maturin serves. Aubrey can have the first lot pressed and the second dangling from a rope's end, if he so chooses.
He will not know.
And you're an American. We need a surgeon.
We do.
Why do you not come with us, Mr. Herapath?
Because...
You were born in the States. You cannot be removed from an American ship. That is the law. We will offer you a full doctor's share, ship and cargo.
I have loyalties, Mr. Hyde.
Do I tempt you?
Some of your men will surely die, sir, without you let Dr. Maturin aboard your ship.
So there is good in the American after all.
Because you have had what you wanted of him?
Your head, Doctor.
Ah, thank you.
And how is Captain Putnam's facing?
It was a difficult, ill-set tooth. It mangled it horribly with plying the pincers upon it.
I haven't mind to send him a sack of coffee beans.
There is a proverb in Ireland. Is minic bull moth. It's not often used, however.
I suppose you will tell me what it means now.
There is good to be found even in an Englishman.
Stow it, Killick. And bring us more toast.
Some of us can't take the jest, shouldn't dish it up themselves.
There are run seamen in that whaler.
My dear Captain, I beseech you just to sit in your good comfortable chair and watch your borrowed forge and leave them alone.
Prime seamen. Whaler's hand.
I speak in sad, sober earnest. A day or so and the Lafayette will be homeward bound. Why should you declare war upon a man that has loaned you the very necessity of your ship's life?
Why should you throw away a God-given salvation, Michael? They are Nantucket bound. Do you not love me?
That you should doubt it.
And your baby.
Louisa, I do love you.
Oh, loved I not honour more? Is that your sticking point? There will be war, Michael, between our nation and England. Where will your honour lead you then?
I still owe Maturin 7 guineas for my uniforms.
Lord, I do love a jolly girl. Listen to her laugh. And upon my word, what an amazingly handsome woman she is.
Despite her being a convict, a spy, a woman of dubious virtue? Sure, I've rarely seen you happier.
Was I young Herapath, I should be strongly tempted to skip with her. I told him so, first thing this morning.
You do not think he might?
No, no. I should hate to see the foundering of your schemes, your pretty bird flown.
Little do you wish to know of my schemes, Jack.
Well, I hope they may prosper. I've never known you wrong. And Herapath may be American as he likes, but I see nothing in him of the rat that leaves a sinking ship. Or even a repairing one. Hey, Steve. A repairing one.
Yes. You're in prodigious fine looks today, ma'am.
Oh, I wish I might believe you.
I speak with never a word of flattery. You are superb.
I am happy to hear it, Doctor.
I've often heard it said of a gravid woman that she blooms, but I've not consciously observed it before today. Ooh. And that reminds me, your kind countryman aboard the Lafayette made me a compliment of furs. I beg you will accept them to wrap your baby in.
Oh, dear Dr. Maturin, how immeasurably kind. And it is my birthday too, almost. Oh,
give you joy, my dear. Mm-hmm.
Sea otter. What luxury. But surely, sir, there must be some lady to whom...
Alas, never a one. I am unlucky in love, my dear.
You must come to Baltimore. There are plenty of girls, good Catholics too. But what am I saying? We are bound for Botany Bay. And we have a beautiful set of new gudgeons, so we may sail away directly.
Not so soon, ma'am. They must first be attached, or shipped, as we say. And then the rudder must be hoisted and fixed in its place.
My dear Doctor, I know you are a friend of America. Mr. Herapath tells me that the whalers sing your praises, and I'm sure they should.
Oh, they overvalue a surgeon's simple skills.
I wish you would go to see a friend of mine when you are next in London. A most interesting, intelligent man. He has a place under government in the Foreign Office, but he is so very different from the ordinary, dull kind of official. His mother came from Baltimore.
I should be happy to know him. What's his name?
Charles Pole. I'm sure he would prove of infinite worth to you, should you but seek him out. He knows everyone and everything, and he has helped me, and he has been a true friend.
Well, I should be very happy to know Mr. Charles Pole. Thank you, my dear.
And now, you who know everything about the sea and ships, tell me, suppose our repairs take a week. Would the Leopard catch up with the whaler?
Never in life. The Lafayette sails tonight on the turn of the tide. It is farewell to her forever.
But a man of war with more masts and sails...
The Leopard will never catch the whaler, my dear. She will never be seen again.
Sun's dipping, sir. You best put on your cape.
Perhaps I should.
They're having a high old time with the rudder. The Marines have hauled it into the larboard shroud, the lubbers.
Take it back down! All taut!
What are you smoking, Bond?
Best Virginia, sir.
You got it from the whaler.
Wow. It don't matter anymore, my telling now. There was an old shipmate of mine aboard the Lafayette. R against his name. Run, sir. Me and Joe Play, so we tipped him the wing and he came up handsome. But they're winning their anchor now, so he's as safe as the tower. Hello? See the boat?
I do not.
Well, pulling for the Lafayette. It's our jolly boat.
I dare say it is Mr. Herapath going to bid them goodbye.
Well, he's pulling awkward enough. Who's his mate? Black-haired boy. I don't know that fizz. Lend it your glass, sir.
Yeah.
It's Mrs. Wogan.
Answer me now! Answer me!
You are mistaken.
She skipped her bail, sir. Shall I shove off and bring her back?
Come in home, man!
No, Bondon. You will sit still. And you will keep quiet.
In Desolation Island by Patrick O'Brien, dramatized for radio by Roger Daines. Captain Jack Aubrey was played by David Robb. Dr. Stephen Maturin by Richard Delane. Louisa Wogan, Teresa Gallagher. Barrett Bondon, Sam Dale. Preserved Killick, John Glover. Midshipman Byron, Nick Underwood. Michael Herapath, Samuel Barnett. Lieutenant Grant, Jonathan Taffler. Josiah Place, Lloyd Thomas. Jedediah Wilby, Gerard McDermott. And Sir Joseph Blaine by Michael Burtonshaw. All other parts were played by the cast. Desolation Island was a BBC Scotland production, directed by Bruce Young.
And next Sunday, you can hear the first part of Jane Austen's classic Sense and Sensibility. Following the death of their father, Eleanor and Marianne are forced to leave their beloved family home to make a new life for themselves. But with neither fortune nor connections, the prospect of marrying the men they love appears remote. Sense and Sensibility begins at 3 o'clock next week.